is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see how the ball's gonna bounce today.
Playoffs?
Basketball historian Tim Gallagher joins the Chicago Bullseye to talk about this incredible NBA Finals. Tim, it's great to have you on again. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, Fred. Summer in San Diego.
Good to hear, man. Good to hear. Summer in Chicago ain't too bad either, so it's all good. And what a Finals, man. After the first two games, it really looked like this was going to be another disappointing Finals and a set of blowouts, it seems, on both sides that really brought us to this point where we're going into Game 7. Like, get your thoughts about the series so far. What do you think of this incredible performance with LeBron James? But more importantly, what's going on with the Warriors, a 73-win team that is suddenly struggling to take out the Cavs? What do you feel that their biggest issues have been?
Sure. Well, it is an epic series, and I'm not just lightly saying that. We talk about sports with so much reverence these days that sometimes when something this spectacular happens, it may lose a little shine. But I think anybody who follows the game is enjoying this tremendously. In fact, I was talking to one of my coaching friends today. He's a local high school coach, and he said, "I hope it goes 8," which means we don't want this to end, right? It's really tremendous theater and tremendous basketball. And I predicted in our Finals preview podcast that it would go 7, and after game 2 I was thinking that was looking pretty shaky, but I guess at least from my crystal ball perspective, we are getting that 7th game now, and in fact last year I predicted Warriors in 6 and that happened. So a couple things, and I don't know if Cleveland has really cracked the code per se. We've seen Golden State vulnerable obviously against OKC, and they still found a way to make it happen, although it looked desperate and backs against the wall. Obviously losing Bogut hurts. Losing Draymond Green in a closeout game at home obviously proved to be critical. And, there's certainly an analogy there to that OKC series when they had, a series-clenching home game against the Warriors, and they did not get it done. So I hope that for the Warriors standpoint, when they didn't get it done in game 5, that wasn't their only chance, because I'm predicting Golden State in 7, and we'll get into the specifics of that in a minute. But the other thing is this performance by LeBron James, and he's certainly the last couple of games, he's been Magic Johnson in Karl Malone's body. So when you combine those two things, it's hard to top that in the history of basketball. And I got to think LeBron does get some criticism here and there, not from me, but from what he's done in this series and even last year in the Finals without Kyrie and Kevin Love, I really think he's beyond, unless he does something tremendously stupid off the court or just ruins his reputation, I think he's really beyond any criticism again for the rest of his career for what he's done, even if they lose. The way he's carried the team on his back and done everything, scored, he's passed the ball, rebounding, leadership, and at home and on the road, I don't know what else you could ask from him. The other thing I'm observing from Cleveland, and we've all talked about small ball and how small ball is better, but stay with me on this one. I think bigger small ball is even better than that. So when your small ball has LeBron in it and a Tristan Thompson in it, and the Warriors small ball group, is not as big physically as those guys, either in height or just physicality, I think you're seeing that Cleveland's taking advantage of that. And I think another big variable, obviously, are these complementary players. And on our Finals preview podcast, I talked about that edge going to Golden State for players like Harrison Barnes, Sean Livingston, kind of that next group of guys. But I think we've seen, especially in home games, how those complementary players have really stepped up. You saw it with Cleveland last night with J.R. Smith and Shumpert, and Richard Jefferson's really played well. And Barnes and Sean Livingston didn't show up last night. And,
Barnes has shown up for two games.
Right. So
two series, and it's absolutely terrible how bad he's played.
Yeah, he's been. I thought Barnes played terrible against the OKC overall in that series, and he's been even worse against the Cavs. And I don't know. I keep on hearing people saying the guy is going to get a max deal. I think you'd have to have your head examined if he's going to give Harrison Barnes a max deal. I mean, if that's what this market means, then don't be one of those teams that overpays. It's still a hard cap. It's not like you have unlimited supplies of money to spend. Harrison Barnes is not worth a max contract.
Right, and I agree with that, although the market will likely bear that, even though we don't agree with that, and I definitely hear you on that. Well, and it's interesting to note how, we've talked about it over the years about, and Harrison Barnes is still a pretty young player in the league, although he's obviously been on a championship team now, played at North Carolina a little bit for Roy Williams. So he's got some maturity, but you see how a player like Richard Jefferson, when things get really physical, and even though he's kind of on the in the twilight part of his career, he can still be very effective in a game or two in the playoffs. And so that's played in the finals, played for the Nets in the finals some years ago now. But just the physicality and what's on someone's shoulders in that kind of a game, it's been interesting to see how Richard Jefferson has stepped up, and not surprising based on his body of work and his career.
And conversely, Barbosa, I thought Barbosa was fantastic last night for the Warriors to see an old vet like him come through.
Right, exactly. He's a crafty guy that knows how to score. And that was certainly a good move by Steve Kerr to get him minutes, because there, I think it was in game, what was it, in game five? He didn't play at all.
Right.
Interesting that Kerr went with him. And I think it's probably going to be someone like that that's going to have to step up in game seven. And maybe they decide to start out big and play Azili, and maybe Azili has an impact, or, it could be one of those Cleveland players. So, it'll be interesting to see, but I guess the most enjoyable thing, and we're going to get a game seven here on Father's Day, is to savor these transcendent players that are competing against each other. And obviously meaning LeBron, Kyrie Irving, Steph, and Clay. And then I guess the other interesting subplot, though, is the third player of the big three on each team has really under-delivered and in terms of Draymond, obviously missing a game and not controlling his emotions. And then when he has come back, hasn't really stepped up. And then Kevin Love, just it seems like things just don't align for him, although here he is as a key player on a team in the seventh game of the finals. So, and his team's been in the finals the last 2 years. Granted, he was injured for a good part of the playoffs last year. So for a guy that gets as much criticism of all the things he can't do, here he is right at the finish line. We'll see if they can get across the finish line. So it's been interesting just to see those two components. The other thing is, Kyrie Irving has kind of stepped his game up another level in my view. And I mean, I'd say he's better even than an Isaiah Thomas at this point, right? From what he's doing out there. And that's not said lightly, but that's how great I think he is, right? He's surpassed a Chris Paul in my mind in terms of just what he's able to do out there.
What do you think is going on with Kevin Love? I can't really think of many situations where a guy of his talent, of his caliber, of his ability, has now been just relegated to basically a bench guy or an afterthought. Well, what is going on here?
It's hard to figure out, and I think I mentioned to you in the past when he was finishing up at Minnesota, I talked to a couple of my NBA insider friends and was really surprised how down they were about Kevin Love overall. Now, it's before he even went to Cleveland, and this is after years of putting up big numbers with the Timberwolves and playing on USA Olympic team, and I was just really surprised. So I don't know. We didn't delve into to why, but there is some undercurrent throughout the league, actually, just of Kevin Love not being in favor, which, as I've mentioned in past podcasts, I've always been a fan of him. Saw him play in high school, saw him play in person at UCLA, and he was a double-double machine in Minnesota, although obviously Minnesota didn't win, didn't even get to the playoffs. So it is a curious situation with him, and I can't quite put my finger on it as well. I guess to his credit, he's not pouting, he's not complaining. He's doing what he can to help them win. So I guess in the face of all this negativity and uncertain whether he's going to be in the starting lineup or even play at all in a fourth quarter, it's just odd. I agree, for someone who's been an all-star and gotten the accolades that he's had throughout his career. I guess we'll see what happens in Game 7 with him, too. And then seeing Steph lose his composure, my expectations are so high for him that I was really stunned to see him have a meltdown and throw his mouthpiece. And, and again, if we're going to be thinking of him in the same terms of some of the all-time great players, I was thinking back and my gold standard of championship level type players, obviously Michael, Magic, Bird, Bill Russell, and even getting to Kobe Bryant or Jerry West, those guys never got ejected from a finals game that I remember. And I would remember that no matter how challenging things
but
got.
Tim, it's a little different. It's a little different in that he was already – that was a sixth foul he picked up when he was ejected. So he's already out of the game. And those fouls were horrendous. I mean, I wanted to get your opinion, too, on Steve Kerr. I thought Steve Kerr was absolutely right. For them to call three fouls, at least three of those fouls weren't even remotely fouls. And you're calling it on the MVP. It's like, if that was situation was reversed, do you really think they would have called those on LeBron? I mean, that was ridiculous. I've never seen something like that. Those last two were so questionable. You have to, as a referee, every one of those referees has some type of, in their head, hey, this guy's got five fouls or four fouls, and he's their key player. Every one of those guys does that. We all know that. And what an atrocious job of refereeing to follow out Steph Curry when at least half of them, to me, I would argue four of them weren't even fouls.
And I've looked at those fouls, and was there contact? Yes. Was it a player of his stature? Was it worthy of being called a foul? I think a couple of them, they kind of snuck in there, right? I don't think the ref's intention, and obviously we want the games to be fair and competitive, but you're right. There's a certain understanding that, millions are watching this game to see LeBron and Steph Curry on the floor. So if they're getting a whistle for a foul, it better be, as legitimate a foul as possible. But I guess my view of it, though, I've looked at them closely, that I just kind of put a little blame on Steph, though, because I think those are kind of risky plays. Even for a guy with the instincts that he has, I think those are kind of low probability steals or, interceptions or what he was trying to do. And especially when he knew he was in foul trouble, I think you just avoid those kind of plays at that time of the game, right? You just can't get yourself close. What are the odds of him stealing the ball away from LeBron after LeBron's gotten a defensive rebound? Pretty slim, right? So, and especially if you've got four or five fouls now and it's at that point of the game, don't even give the refs a chance to make a questionable call, in my view. So I put it a little bit on Steph in that I thought those were kind of risky plays considering all the circumstances. And, I think there's a lot of times when LeBron, is plowing guys over, right? As I mentioned, Magic Johnson and a Karl Malone body. And it's hard to tell. You have to go back and watch him over and over. Is he really, using his shoulder to clear guys out? Or he's such a physical specimen that people go flying off of him like almost like a superhero, right? But I think there's a lot of times he gets away with things that aren't called. And,
Oh, no doubt. I mean, all superstars do. That's why I had no problem with how frustrated he was when he threw that. I mean, he fouled out. It's a completely different situation. Like, some people are comparing it to, Green and his actions. It's night and day. Green, if you watch closely enough, hit a guy in the balls. That I've heard about Draymond. Draymond kicked a guy in the balls. To me, the situation, he was already out of the game. It wasn't like it was the fifth or fourth foul when he did that and was kicked out. And, he's not going to get suspended for that. I don't believe so. I think the decision's already been made. Just
at some point you got to stand up if officials are making calls like that. And I just thought it, was just outrageous. Just some horrible officiating there. You know, but as Kerr said, that's not the reason they lost. The reason they lost is because, you know, Cleveland took it to them. Looking at Game 7, what do you foresee in Game 7?
Well, I'm going to stick with my prediction and say Golden State in 7 at home, and thank goodness for them, they have the home court. They played all season, obviously, to put themselves in this position if it would happen to come to this, and I don't really think many of us expected it would, although no one expected they'd have such trouble with OKC either. So, and I think what you just mentioned about Steph's reaction and Kerr's reaction, you know, you just have seen enough over the years in the NBA where the calls are going to probably swing back their way, right? That's going to be well noted. And I think Curry's going to have to basically flatten somebody to get a foul called on him in this game, right? So,
no, agreed.
If he reaches in and gets a little arm or gets, you know, touches a little hand on someone's release on their jumper, I think the officials are going to be looking the other way on that. But I understand how Curry would be frustrated, but to see him throw his mouthpiece and just see him lose it to that level, again, like I said, my expectations are so high for him that his composure would be one of those skills that's right there with all his basketball and leadership skills. So it just surprised me a little bit. You know, one other quick little sidelight about Curry's ejection, and you might have seen the distinguished African-American gentleman, the Warrior security guy that kind of is following him around. I happened to talk to him one time at the Summer League in Las Vegas where the Warriors Hotel was, and saw him waiting around. And as the players were making their way off the elevators, ended up talking with him. And it turns out he's a former Chicago area high school player. He played in the early 70s at Orr High School and then later played at St. Mary's out in the Bay Area. So his name's Ralph Walker. Yeah.
Wow.
So, so interesting tie to the Chicago area. And again, you might wonder who that guy is. And I kind of got him going once I found out where he was from. And there were a couple players around his era that I knew top of mind, being the historian I am, like Ricky Green, who played at Michigan and in the NBA, and Billy the Kid Harris, that played at Northern Illinois and then in the ABA and was, you know, certainly on the short list of all-time Chicago playground legends. So I kind of got him going with that. And so as certain players would come off the elevator, Clay Thompson or Harrison Barnes or whatever, he'd call them over, and you know, we had some things. Our kids were with us to get signed and so on. So that was kind of a fun day. But anyway, just a quick little sidelight on the Chicago connection with the Warriors security director.
A couple quick things before we wrap up. I wanted to get your opinion on that. Iguodala, not the same guy he was last year, clearly. He's running around now. Clearly his back's hurting him. He looks like he's about 90 playing the game. Huge problem for Golden State if he's not where he usually is at, right? Or if he's not approaching the Iguodala level we come to expect. Because he has been, you know, in these games against the Cavs, especially last year, just a very extremely important player. I mean, heck, he was the MVP. But J.R. Smith on the Cavs side is such a wild card. You know, he had a couple big shots yesterday, I felt, in the Game 6 victory. He's another kind of guy that, you know, if he gets hot, that guy can just light it up. And that's why I think this one it's not such a slam dunk as it would appear. It's because I feel like there's a couple players on the obviously they're without Bogut. You know, there's a couple players on the Warriors who aren't really playing up to par, key players, and there's a couple guys on the Cavs that seem to be healthy and starting to maybe come on. What say you?
Well, I agree, and even though I'm sticking with my Golden State in 7, and because of the home court, I think it's going to be a very intense and close game for those reasons you mentioned. And Golden State is kind of limping to the finish line without Bogut, with a less than 100% Iguodala. Obviously, there's a lot of frustration with Curry, and not in terms of his health, but just, you know, what happened in the last game. So there's certainly some chinks in the armor there as it relates to Golden State. And like you said, the Cavs have a couple wild cards, and somebody like J.R. Smith is fearless, right? And he'll hit a dagger of a three, whether he's 1 for 10 or 7 for 10 in the game. And, you know, he has that mindset that he'll take it. And and be ready to meet the moment. So you're right. There's a lot of variables and wild cards, as I mentioned, with these complementary players, meaning, you know, kind of the players, let's say, you know, 4 through 8 on those rosters, and who's going to step up. My intuition, and I think it's still going to be tough for Golden State, but playing at home, the energy of the crowd and playing at home is going to buoy, you know, the Sean Livingstons and Harrison Barneses and maybe a Barbosa, an Azili. And Azili maybe not obviously on the offensive end, but maybe blocking shots and having more rim protection. You know, they showed some excellent footage of LeBron orchestrating the offense, and that what made me think of Magic Johnson in his heyday. And without any rim protection with Bogut, if they weren't playing LeBron for the outside shot, he would just take it to the basket and finish. Now, they weren't easy finishes. Some of them were left-handed, you know, and contested, but a big difference in taking it to the rack like that with Bogut not in the game. And so that really changes the dynamics of things where LeBron can have that. Now, when they are playing him more aggressively to stop that drive to the basket, then he found open teammates, you know, Tristan Thompson and others. So it's going to be a fantastic finish and what we'd all wanted to see. And, I just have to go with Golden State because of home court. They won last year. And, but obviously we've seen what can happen if LeBron and Kyrie go off, or if Clay and Steph go off. It's, you know, anything's possible with this group. So, but I'm going to stick with my Warriors in 7 because of the home court advantage, a slight edge based on all these variables we've talked about. Can't wait to watch it.
Me too. I agree completely, Tim. Hey, happy Father's Day to you. Happy Father's Day to all the listeners out there. Most importantly, enjoy Game 7. I cannot wait. I know you can't wait either. I'm really looking forward to Sunday. And I'm looking forward to talking with you early next week to follow up on that Game 7, get your opinion on what happened, and the opinion as the draft approaches next week. So I hope all is well with you, and talk to you soon, Tim. Thanks again for
talking. All right, happy Father's Day to you, Fred, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the
game. All right, my man.